morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Lori. Today on the program, on the first half, we're going to talk about the possibility of war with China. There are rising tensions between the U.S. and China, and we'll talk about that in a moment. Later on, we'll open up the phone lines. Unfortunately, we had a lot of comments about yesterday's program, but our phone system has some trouble. So we're going to try to fix that so we can get your comments on next time. Well, increasingly, if you watch the ads on television, Joe Biden and Donald Trump are attacking each other over the issue of China. Let's listen to a sample of ads from the Trump campaign and also Trump PACs and also the Joe Biden campaign. This is what they're saying about China on TV ads.
I'm ready to go.
This is a crisis.
This is no time for Donald Trump's record of hysterical xenophobia.
Biden's son inked a billion-dollar deal with a subsidiary of the Bank of China.
China is going to eat our lunch. Come on, man. They're not bad folks, folks.
Since the outbreak, the Communist Party has been mobilizing overseas organizations to buy local supplies and send them to China.
It is in our self-interest that China continue to prosper.
What a beautiful history we wrote together. Banning all travel will not stop
it. President is right. That travel restriction on China, as every public health official we've talked to said, bought the country time.
That was a very smart move, right?
Hysterical xenophobia.
Fear mongering. Xenophobia.
I complimented him on dealing with China.
I'm not going nuts.
A global crisis. President Trump took action. But Joe Biden attacked Trump after the China travel ban.
Xenophobia and fear-mongering.
For 40 years, Joe Biden has been wrong about China.
I believed in 1979, and I believe now, that a rising China is a positive development.
Deadly epidemic. But after 40 years, Joe Biden failed the test. America First Action is responsible for the content of this advertising.
Well, those are some of the pro-Trump and Trump PAC ads attacking Joe Biden on the issue of China. Here is how Joe Biden is pushing back on the issue of China. He's attacking Trump over the issue of China.
He failed to act. So now Trump and his allies are launching negative attacks against Joe Biden to hide the truth. Here are the facts. Joe Biden warned the nation in January that Trump had left us unprepared for a pandemic. Then, Biden told Trump he should insist on having American health experts on the ground in China.
I would be on the phone with China and making it clear, we are going to need to be in your country. You have to be open. You have to be clear. We have to know what's going on.
But Trump rolled over for the Chinese. He took their word for it.
The president tweeted, China has been working very hard to contain the coronavirus. The United States greatly appreciates their efforts and transparency.
China, I spoke with President Xi, and they're working very, very hard. And I think it's going to all work out fine.
Trump praised the Chinese 15 times in January and February as the coronavirus spread across the world.
It's a tough situation. I think they're doing a very good job.
Are you concerned about its potential impact on the global economy?
I think that China will do a very good job.
Trump never got a CDC team on the ground in China. And the travel ban he brags about? Trump let in 40,000 travelers from China into America after he signed it. Not exactly airtight. Look around. 22 million Americans are out of work, and we have more officially reported cases and deaths than any other country. Donald Trump left this country unprepared and unprotected for the worst public health and economic crisis in our lifetime. And now we're paying the price. All the negative ads in the world can't change the truth.
Well, that's a Joe Biden ad attacking Donald Trump over the issue of China. In both the ads, both series of ads, the campaigns are painting China as an evil force. On the website, thediplomat.com, which is read by diplomats here in the U.S. and around the world, a former member of the National Security Council, Daniel Russell, writes this: "Today, the deteriorating relationship between China and the U.S. is a major geopolitical risk. The relationship's protective insulation has been stripped away, nerves are exposed, and the mechanisms for diffusing tension are defunct. battle rages between Beijing and Washington over trade, technology, investment, supply chains, journalists, and COVID-19. Diplomats from the U.S. Secretary of State to China's rabid wolf warriors are trading decidedly undiplomatic barbs. Public attitudes toward the other nation taking a sharp turn for the worse, and China, often a bogeyman in the U.S. presidential campaigns, is shaping up as a central issue in the escalating battle between the 2020 candidates, Biden and Trump. And Russell goes on to write, the often uneasy equilibrium that has marked U.S.-China relations for decades should not inure us to the risk that we may now be dangerously close to a tipping point where even a small action would serve as a catalyst that lets slip the dogs of war. Earlier this week, I spoke with James Bradley, who is the author of several nonfiction bestsellers about Asia, including Flags of Our Fathers. That was about Iwo Jima. The book was later made into a movie by Clint Eastwood. His other books include The China Mirage, The Hidden History of American Disaster in Asia. He's lived in Asia off and on since he went to the university in Tokyo in 1974. He's currently in the Bay of Plenty in New Zealand. And he is producing a series on war with China, possible war with China. And he also appears in the documentary by John Pilger called The Coming War on China. And I spoke with James Bradley earlier this week. James Bradley, welcome to WMNF. Good to talk to you all the way in New Zealand.
Thanks for having me.
In this country, both Joe Biden and President Trump are running ads attacking China. And the other day, on Friday, President Trump, and I'm just reading from the CNN website, launched a blistering attack on Beijing Friday, naming misdeeds that range from espionage to the violation of Hong Kong's freedoms, and announced a slew of retaliatory measures that will plunge U.S.-China relations deeper into crisis. I'm sure you've read the news and heard the news. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, if I was running for president, I would have to hate China because, you know, if the public wants something, green trees, then I'm for green trees to get elected president. And one thing the Americans can unite on is disliking China. Look at the polls. So if you've got 80, 90% of the population ready to demonize somebody, you better jump on that political train.
Is that demonization justified?
You know, you could talk for hours and 80, 90% feel that way. See, my last book was called The China Mirage, The China Mirage. And I'm not trying to sell my book, but what is the China Mirage? The China Mirage is in America and it's about China and it's the American conception of China. And it's the idea that the Chinese, you know, history will eventually have the Chinese becoming more like America. That if it wasn't for those terrible leaders on top, the wonderful Chinese people would become Democrats just like us. And then we look at Hong Kong and look at they're demonstrating they like to be just like us. And then the terrible Chinese leaders are putting them down. And well, this is a recurring theme in American history. I trace it all the way back to George Washington. And we don't like China when they're being like China, but we like China when they're going to be like us. So during the Franklin Roosevelt administration, 1930s, China was going to become Christian, and they were our favorite ally. They polled higher than Winston Churchill's England in World War II because China was going to be just like us. And then when Mao Zedong arose and kicked Chiang Kai-shek out, oh my God, we hated China. And it was, you know, we just really hated China. We fired everyone in the State Department who spoke Chinese. So just a couple days ago, Maria Bartolomo was interviewing a State Department spokesperson. I can get you the names. I have the clip. And Maria Bartolomo, a very well-known financial person on cable, says, you know, the thing here with China is that when they joined the World Trade Organization, we thought they, you know, they'd open up and look at American democracy and say, hey, we'd like some of this democracy, but that's not the way it worked out. And the State Department spokesperson says, yes, we were so disappointed. You know, for 40 years we tried. Well, that's the China Mirage. You know, China was supposed to become more American. Hong Kong democracy, by the way, there never was any democracy in Hong Kong. It was a British ruled and stolen. Anyway, so yeah, there's this China mirage going on, and we're going through a cycle of hating China right now.
Is it just saber rattling, or are we on the way to military conflict with China?
Well, Michael Clare, an expert named Michael Clare, K-L-A-R-E, a national security expert. I just interviewed him for our podcast, Untold Pacific, Untold Pacific. And Michael Clare says that the U.S. military doctrine is that war with China, kinetic war with China, is inevitable. That's the United States policy. And it's not a military policy. It's the civilian policy above the military. And if you read the documents, that's true. Obama pivoted to Asia. What did that mean? It meant that the, you know, fighting terrorists is kind of dirty and it's low cost. But China, if China's the enemy, woo, satellites, Navy. I mean, you know, this is a gravy train for the arms manufacturers. So war with China, or at least preparation for war with China, is very profitable.
And that's the civilian leadership in Washington that then pushes for preparation for armed conflict.
Well, yeah, you know, again, on my podcast, I interviewed John Pilger. I'm referring to people much smarter than me. And John Pilger, the great documentarian, Australia's greatest living journalist, did a documentary called The Coming War with China that's on YouTube, The Coming War with China. And you know, that was done in 2016, and he said we're already at war with China. So if you look at war, currency war, kinetic war, satellite war, trade war, you know, there's a lot of wars going on with China, verbal war, and it could lead to kinetic war. But neither Trump nor Xi want that. Trump's a businessman, has to get the economy going. Xi is not looking for a military confrontation with anybody. But, you know, with COVID and these riots, you know, both sides have to blame somebody. And if you look at the polls, if I wanted to run for president, I would be blaming the hell out of China. I would want to get elected. And the American public are baying for, you know, something negative against China.
I'm going to play a clip from that film, The Coming War on China, which you mentioned a moment ago. And here it is.
Tonight at 10, a rare glimpse of China's ambitious expansion in one of the world's most contested regions. We report from the South China Sea, where the Chinese are warning off anyone who comes too close to their building program.
We continue our look this morning at what China does not want you to see. The United States says the superpower is reclaiming land in the South China Sea.
The fact that we're dealing with a situation right now where we, the U.S., has to be much more aggressive in dealing with the Chinese government.
CNN has learned that the U.S. Navy is about to send a destroyer there. Let's go to our CNN chief.
CNN got exclusive access to classified U.S. surveillance flights over the islands.
The threat of China is becoming big news. The media is beating the drums of war as the world is being primed to regard China as a new enemy.
China's alarming creation of entirely new territory in the South China Sea is one part of a broader military push that some fear is to challenge U.S. dominance in the region.
One of the points made in the film is that China is ringed by dozens and dozens of U.S. military bases. China is planning to build, is in the process of building a military base in the South China Sea, expanding an island there. But that's one base versus 30 or so bases. On the U.S. side, we have 30 bases. On the Chinese side, they've got one outside their country.
Yeah, again, with this base idea, you know, I just interviewed David Vine. His book is called Base Nation. And the Pentagon can't tell us how many bases we have overseas, you know? I mean, how many golf courses exactly do, you know, does the U.S. military have surrounding all these countries? We're containing China. We move troops into Australia. We're doing exercises in Thailand. Every year, America spends billions of dollars on military exercises to close the Singapore Straits, which would be strategic in a war against China. How many tens of thousands of troops do we have in Korea, Japan? How many billions of dollars of armaments do we just sell to Taiwan? So yes, we're surrounding China to contain China. Michael Clare, the military guy, or the national security guy, said, you know, after World War II, the American military learned to forward deploy. We want to fight the wars in their theater, not ours. So we're forward deployed in the Pacific out to the Asian coast. It's extremely expensive, and we have hundreds of bases that Americans are not aware of. You know, where's the problem with China? Is China in San Francisco Bay? Oh, my God. China just opened a base in Toronto. We've got to do something. No. China just opened a base in Mexico. You know, see, that's not the problem. We are way across the Pacific and, you know, dinking around, and there could be conflict. So the experts I'm talking to are saying no one wants to actively go to war in the leadership of Beijing or Washington, but there's so much hardware, you know, in the air and on the sea, you know, dinking around with each other, that there could be an accident. If 4,000 Americans, you know, sink in an aircraft carrier, America's going to be baned for blood. If there's some accident and we sink a bunch of Chinese or bomb them, you know, accidentally, I mean, what is the emperor of China going to do when he has 1.4 million people upset?
We're talking with James Bradley. He's the author of several nonfiction bestsellers focused on the American experience in the Pacific and Asia, including Flags of Our Fathers and The China Mirage, The Hidden History of American Disaster in Asia. And this is WMNF in Tampa. You said that for 40 years, the U.S. has wanted to make China look more like the U.S. and kind of adopt our values. But in a sense, they have adopted our values, haven't they? I mean, if you go to Shanghai, it's going to look like streets in New York, where you've got every major retailer with a shop in Shanghai. And you've got a growing middle class, people with lots of money. And you've got more billionaires than the U.S. has. So in a sense, they've become more like us, haven't they?
Well, more like us. I mean, where'd we get the idea to have cities and stores? You know, maybe we became more like, you know, it's just China. But the key word you said is if you go to China, and I'll just speak to your audience. Just think of the people around you, your family members, your aunts, uncles, fathers, whatever. You know, how many times have they been to where? To London or Rome or, you know, somewhere in Europe or the Caribbean or South America? And then how many have really been to China? Yeah, Uncle Joe took a 2-week cruise on the Yangtze River, but Americans really haven't been going across the Pacific in the last 300 years very much. It's huge. The Pacific is huge. The flights are enormous. The cultural barriers to going to China for an American are there. So we don't know China. And these, you know, typical Chinese scenes, we don't see in America. What we see is only the propaganda. And that is China's aggressive. You know, China's on the move. We have to do something about China. China poisoned the world. China this, China that. And then you go to China and it's like, wow, you know, the propaganda in the United States about China is not happening in China. That's why I called my book The China Mirage.
What do you think Americans, if they were to go to China today, to one of the larger cities, not to the countryside, but if they were to go to one of the larger cities, and there's many of them, what would Americans be most surprised about, given the kind of information we get here at home, the anti-China ads that both Biden and Trump are running? What would be most surprising?
I think the most surprising thing would be the calmness and happiness of the society, the smiles, the Chinese with confidence. You know, the rulers of China have been putting 50 million people a year into the middle class for years. You know, they've been graduating engineers to rebuild the country. They have been announcing plans. This is what China's going to do by 2025. Then by 2049, here's our goal. You know, this all you hear is this Communist Party like holding down the Chinese people like ants. Again, this is in the 19th century propaganda, the 20th century propaganda, now the 21st century. But they're not being held down as a bunch of ants. They have the mandate of heaven, and they feel they have input into the leadership. The Pew Research Group, an American polling group, regularly says that 80% of the Chinese people are satisfied with the progress of their government. So I think the big surprise for Americans would be the lack of negativity in China, and the buoyancy and the future look and the confidence and the and just the relaxed life.
But at the same time, China is moving further to limit the freedoms in Hong Kong. The Uyghurs, the Muslim community, is certainly oppressed and treated as second-class citizens in China. And you can't bring up, as a Chinese, you can't bring up Tiananmen Square. You can't say, this is what happened. You can't go to Tiananmen Square and hold a protest. So there are restrictions on the political freedom in China, right?
Yeah, I'm from Wisconsin, haven't been there for a few years, but let's say I bought a big barn in Wisconsin and I put up Allah, a picture of Allah, and, you know, on a big barn on a highway and everybody could see it. Do you think that barn wouldn't get burned down? You know, I mean, there's, you know, do we have complete freedom of the press, really? I just did a podcast calling for the Washington Post and New York Times to return their Pulitzers because they wrote fiction about Russiagate. What was that? That was free press or propaganda. So let's address China. China has a Muslim problem. The Muslims are in between it and the rest of Asia. It's, you know, in between it and Moscow to cause a lot of problems. The United States has bombed its Muslim problem. You know, President Obama was bombing, actively bombing 9 Muslim countries at one time, droning. Look at what's happening in Yemen. The United States is causing the largest humanitarian crisis in the world in Yemen, but we're not writing about it. We're not talking about it. So, yes, China is repressing its Muslims, but they're not bombing them. They decided to, you know, go another way. Tiananmen Square is very sensitive. What else did you say? Oh, freedoms of Hong Kong. You know, I first hit Hong Kong in 1974. If you would have walked up to me and said, you know, look at all the freedoms the Chinese are enjoying in Hong Kong. I mean, what are you talking about? You know, it was the British stole Hong Kong from China, and it was British rule. There was never an election to elect the governor of Hong Kong. It was appointed by the Queen and, you know, screw everybody else. So Hong Kong is Chinese. It was stolen from the Chinese, and it's going to become Chinese. And you know, look at our riots right now. We're saying there's a lot of peaceful people out there, but there's an undercurrent of organized violence paid for, you know, microphones in the ears, equipment, communications, people traveling state to state. Well, that's what the emperor saw in Hong Kong last fall. Is he saw agitation, foreign agitation. And the number one thing China, if you look at, you know, how the Chinese think about many things, it's about order and chaos. Chaos kills tens of millions of people. So Deng Xiaoping defended Tiananmen Square in an article saying, you know what, some people died, but if chaos spreads in China, tens of millions die for decades. And look at Chinese history. So they're into order. And the emperor saw disorder in Hong Kong, and the emperor is going to clean that up.
And when you say emperor, you're saying the president of China.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we keep saying that the Communist Party of China, the Communist Party is the largest meritocracy in the world, about 80 million people. And you have to be pretty competent to continue to rise in the Chinese leadership. I'm not endorsing them or saying I agree with them. I'm just saying it's a meritocracy. We used to say mandarins in the old days. You know, there was the emperor and the mandarins. Well, now the Communist Party is the mandarin. And the emperor is Xi and, you know, a committee and a few people. So it's still the emperor system. Beijing rules. And if there's disorder, the emperor has to act.
James Bradley is our guest. He's the author of several nonfiction bestsellers focused on the American experience in the Pacific and Asia, including Flags of Our Fathers and The China Mirage, The Hidden History of American Disaster in Asia. And this is WMNF 88.5 FM. So in the U.S., is there a pro-war with China lobby, and who comprises that lobby?
You know, you can look at the Committee for the Present Danger, China. So when you see Steve Bannon foaming at the mouth about China, well, then you go to the website of the Committee on Present Danger. Oh, wow, here's Steve Bannon a year ago, you know, at the committee doing the talking points. So a lot of the Kyle Bass, a lot of the anti-China people in the media trace back to this committee. And that's been another thing in American life, these committees rabble-rousing for or against China.
President Trump and his family have gotten favorable treatment from China when it comes to their businesses and their trademarks. And in fact, some labor activists who've tried to investigate the goings-on at factories that produce Trump goods, they disappear. So tell me, you know, is the president mixed on this? I mean, on the one hand, he wants to campaign against China. On the other hand, he uses China and his family uses China as a center for their profits.
You know, I can't comment. I don't know enough about that, about the Trump connection, but we're talking, I don't know. I have headphones in my ears. I think they're made in China. The microphone I'm talking to is probably made in China. I'm standing in shoes made in China. So I guess I'm compromised too, you know. This shaking our fist, China, we rebuilt China and China stole from us. Well, you know, I suggest an investigation into this. Let's go into an American's home and then look at that big screen TV and look on the back and, oh, made in China. This guy's guilty. Well, now, where's the receipt for that? Oh, came from Walmart. Is Walmart a front for China? All the Americans with Chinese goods in their homes? Come on, we benefited quite a bit in the last 20 years in our relationship with China, and we can continue to benefit. The big bugaboo is, you know, will China be number one? Well, just a minute, folks. America has 330 million people. China has 1.4 billion. Why wouldn't an ancient society that is used to being rich and that is now returning to its former, plateau, is it conceivable that 1.4 million people can have a larger economy than 330 million people? It's conceivable. America could double the size of its economy by in a number two position. You know, it doesn't mean the end of America or a military conflict or something happened. It's just China China was poor for 400 years as a result of the Industrial Revolution and then getting invaded by the foreign devils. But if you look at the history before that, China was the richest, most sophisticated place on earth. I mean, the Chinese were walking around in silk clothes, reading books coming off of printing presses with currency in their pocket when the Parisians were digging garlic and onions out of the ground. You know, I mean, if you look at it the Chinese way, the American way, we're just looking at like, you know, they cracked down in Hong Kong last week. No, you've got to open the lens. What is Hong Kong? What does that mean to the Chinese? It's an open sore. It was stolen from them. And of course, they're going to, you know, fold Hong Kong back into the country.
We started this interview where you were describing how over the decades the U.S. has tried to remake China and hoped to remake China in its image. One of the things that we did was that we sent Christian missionaries to China to try to change their religion. How did the Chinese view our attempts to Christianize that nation?
Well, see, you know, here again, I mean, this was... So what Maria Bartolomeo in that quote that I just did was talking about was we showed our wonderfulness to the Chinese and they disappointed us. They didn't become Democrats. They didn't put white churches on every hill. You know, they don't eat potluck suppers. I mean, this just happened 2 weeks ago, this quote I'm talking about. Americans thinking that way. The State Department, China was supposed to become Americanized. Well, it started with the missionaries. See, when America was founded, the biggest trade in the world was between Britain and China, the opium trade. And America had difficulty projecting military power out to China. We were a weak little country. So we came upon the strategy of our missionaries. And, you know, a missionary idea assumes the inferiority of the other person. I'm a missionary, I have Jesus, and the Chinese are pagans, and they're all going to go to hell, I'll save them. So we send the missionaries out there, and then China was supposed to become Christian. And in the 1930s, Chiang Kai-shek and the Song family, as I document in my book, The China Mirage, propagandized this idea. They created a China lobby with Franklin Roosevelt, and they sold the idea to the American public for just a few billion dollars more. Chiang Kai-shek, who's holding this Bible, is going to Christianize China. And that's what America was told over and over and over, every year through the FDR administration. And then in 1949, the Chinese people spoke. They chose Mao, and we were shocked. China was supposed to become just like us. And we reacted with McCarthyism. This is not a little thing. The beginning of McCarthyism came from our disappointment that China didn't become Christian. Mm. And there's a whole long story I can go into. I don't know how long you have, but yes, the missionaries, now it's our, according to Maria Bartolomeo and the State Department, it's now our wonderful capitalists who went out there and showed their, you know, shiny wonderfulness to the Chinese. And the Chinese did not abandon their civilization and asked to become like Americans. It's I know it sounds silly, but this is the idea in the American mind, the China mirage.
Well, we're talking about the possibility of war with China, and this is WMNF in Tampa. A few years ago, I interviewed an official in the government of Jamaica who said that China was helping them build a cross-country interstate system or freeway system to better connect the major cities in Jamaica. How common is it for China to build infrastructure in other countries, and how does that compare to how the U.S. does or doesn't help other countries build their infrastructure?
Boy, that's a big one. The New Silk Road, the Belt and Road Initiative, it has many names, but I would encourage people to look up the Belt and Road Initiative. This is President Xi's big idea, China's big idea. And the idea is just to network the world. So the Belt and Road Initiative, you know, has the first rail car just went from Shanghai to London a few months ago. And it's a network around the world. So they have plans how to connect Spain with Morocco underwater, you know, build a tunnel, the southern part of South America. So it's just a network of infrastructure and trade. And China wants to, you know, unite. It's a very futuristic thing. Well, America sees this as a threat, and we're reacting militarily. We're not reacting with a counter, you know, big idea.
Hmm. So, James, what advice would you give to Americans about every time they turn on the television, they see either a politician complaining about China or an ad from one of the two major presidential candidates attacking China, and you hear saber rattling, as you mentioned before, Steve Bannon and the Committee on the Present Danger. When they see these anti-Chinese messages, how would you suggest that Americans take it?
I don't know how to answer it because I don't see it that way, like others are imposing that idea. I see it as the earth is fertile in the United States to hate China. If you look at the polls, you know, before anybody sees a political ad, you've got 80-90% of Americans who don't know much about China, who are, you know, following a propagandist China mirage, and they're negative on China. So, of course, when they turn on the TV, politicians are going to have to be telling them what they want to hear, and that is China ruined everything. The only solution I have is we've got to get across the Pacific more. We've got to stop this. You know, the future is across the Pacific. The future is in Asia. And I'm not saying because anybody's better than anybody. Look at the numbers. Look at the work ethic. look what's going on economically. So, you know, America doesn't have to decline. America can continue to grow. But we've got to get used, we've got to go to Asia more and look at Asia more and understand it more. And there can be peace across the Pacific. But right now, there's a rickety bridge across the Pacific. Very few Americans, relatively, have ever been to Asia compared to our European roots.
Well, that's so true. So, James, what else? What should I have asked you that I didn't ask you that you want Americans to know?
Oh, you know, I'm not that smart of a guy to be able to, you know, figure out what Americans should know. I'm just a guy who, I went to school in Japan in 1974. I've been out in Asia. I've got a podcast series called Untold Pacific, and I have a section called War with China? And I'm trying to talk to intelligent people about what's happening. And right now, in a nutshell, what's happening is both countries are locking down because both sides are attacking each other. There's less fluidity in the relationships. There's going to be fewer students going back and forth. There's going to be fewer business people. So we're backing into corners. You know, I wrote a lot about World War II. And in studying World War II, I looked at maps of the 1920s and 30s. And there were trading blocks. So you'd actually see like French Indochina, Laos, Cambodia, and Vietnam, that was a different color than Malaysia, Hong Kong, Singapore, which were British. You know, there were these blocks, trading blocks, and you had to move from the French franc to the British pound to the, you know, blah, blah, blah. Well, that's the type of world we're going to. We're all kind of retreating. We're moving into our blocks, and there's two huge balloons on either side of the Pacific. And it's like two huge balloons in a closed room. And eventually they'll bump up against each other. They're called the United States and China, the two biggest economies and powers in the world. And we need some understanding so when those balloons bump and history moves, that we don't fight it out. I'm just suggesting we talk it out.
James Bradley, thank you for coming on WMNF.
Hey, glad to be here. Goodbye from the Bay of Plenty in New Zealand.
That's James Bradley. He's the author of several nonfiction bestsellers focused on the American experience in the Pacific and Asia, including Flags of Our Fathers and The China Mirage. He's lived off and on in Asia for the last 45 years, and he's been doing a series of podcasts about the possible coming war with China. Well, you're listening to WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM. If you want to comment about what James told us, you can call us up at 813-239-9663. You can email the studio here. The address is dj@wmnf.org. Just want to remind you, too, that this show has been available as a podcast for years, and you can subscribe to get this show as a podcast. Never miss an episode, always a new interview, whether it's an interview with somebody locally here in the Tampa Bay area or around Florida or around the country or around the world, as that interview was with James Bradley in New Zealand. And also the WMNF fund drive is coming up this summer, but we're doing it a little bit differently. We're going to do a low-key fund drive, and we're not going to do a full 7-day, full tilt fund drive. And we're hoping that by doing a more low-key approach, we can make it easier on you. And so to give us a head start, you may want to make a contribution online at WMNF.org. You can make a contribution there. Well, let's open up the phone lines. There's a lot to talk about. We could talk about China. There's also a lot going on locally and nationally. And again, our phone number, 813-239-9663. Email address, dj@wmnf.org. Danny wrote this, fear-mongering now. We don't have enough to deal with. You need to add world war fear. Sounds like President Trump. I'm turning off MNF, writes Danny. All right, Danny, thanks a lot. And Turtle Cove says, your guest is trying to sell his book. Perhaps if you haven't, you should watch the Netflix documentary American Factory. Your guest lost his credibility with me when I heard him refer to current demonstrations as riots. Actually, you know, we did interview Julia Reichard, who did the film American Factory about the Chinese ownership of the factory in Dayton. And that interview, I think this was the only radio station in Florida that interviewed Julia. So you can go back to our archives and listen back to that. I try to pay attention to a lot of things. And Turtle, thank you very much for that. 813-239-9663 is our phone number. And let's go to Fran in Largo. Fran, thanks for calling in. What would you like to say?
Thank you, Rob. No, I just wanted to say that I've watched some documentaries about China on PBS recently. I've never visited there myself, but it was just fascinating. And it's an ancient culture, and they have in their way added so much to humanity. They have had their cruel times too, with cruel emperors and taking away people's rights. But some of the things that they have done are just amazing. People can trace their ancestries back thousands of years. I mean, that to me, that alone is amazing. And, our culture, why do we have to keep shoving things down other people's throats? Why can't we just appreciate what they've done and learn from them instead of always, with our culture, with this country, it's always about making more money and more money. I just wanted to say that, but the Chinese culture, aspects of it are just fascinating, and we should try to learn from it. Okay, thank you, Rob.
All right, Fran, thanks a lot. Thank you for calling. And Bob in Largo writes, Americans have prospered from Chinese commodities, yet, Bob goes on to say, yet American wages have stagnated for 35 years. Does that mean that things would have been worse for Americans if not for China? I think the question of China is really this. You and I did not decide to move our factories to China. You and I did not decide to become Walmart and buy 80 or 90% of our goods from China. Now, I think we have a choice, you know. And, I think the fact that factories have moved from the U.S. to China, in part by like Mitt Romney's Bain Capital moving factories to China. It wasn't you and me that did that. It was other people. And we have a conscious choice. You can shop at stores that predominantly source from China, or you can try to buy locally. You can try to look for American-made products. I think we have a choice. But also, we're kind of at the mercy of those big-box stores that, have just decide, okay, when we buy something like clothes or shoes or footballs or whatever, we're going to have it made overseas in China. And that wasn't your choice or my choice to do that. But I think we should be conscious too about where we buy things, but we shouldn't be, should we go to war over it? That's the question. 813-239-9663. Karen writes this, I've never been to Europe, but I have been to both Japan and India. I try to bring back a different narrative through pictures than what we are served in this country, writes Karen. Let's go to Dave in Tampa. Dave, thanks for your patience. What would you like to say?
Hey, good morning, Rob. I listened to that interview, and I agree that it's not good to vilify China, and both parties right now in this country are doing that for political purposes. But I don't think that guy's critique is, I think he's way off. I mean, there's no reason to be sanguine about China any more than there is to be sanguine about what's going on in this country. China represses labor rights. China represses the press. China is attempting to undermine democracy in Taiwan. I know he didn't mention Taiwan. Taiwan is a democracy. And Hong Kong wants to be democratic. China is repressing that. China is awful when it comes to environmental degradation. And so, we do the same things here. And rather than try to paint this as, we're trying to push Christianity on them and make them be like us, maybe the critique ought to be they have the same problems in their system that we do here, and we ought to be demanding reform in both places. And if we're going to reach out to China, let's reach out to the Chinese people for labor rights and press freedoms and support that sort of thing over there, instead of saying that the Uyghurs, you're going to rationalize the Uyghurs by telling me I paint Allah on the side of a barn in Wisconsin is going to burn down? I mean, that's absurd. And that's not even a fair criticism.
Well, Dave, I would say, I'll bet James doesn't disagree with you. I think the question, though, is, do you go to war over it?
That's the question.
No, absolutely not. No.
That's really his bottom line. His bottom line is not to defend the repression of a religious minority. His bottom line is, we're on the way to war. Look out.
But he doesn't condemn it. I mean, you need. Why should we be sanguine about these things?
I think he thinks the bigger picture is you've got a nuclear power in China with 1.4 million people, and you've got a nuclear power in the U.S. with 330 million people. And if they go to war, you know, that's the end of the planet. So that's the bigger thing. I'm not dismissing what you say. I think press freedom, I think the religious minorities, I think Tibet, which we didn't bring up when I was talking to James. But I think the bigger question is, does that anger over, you know, all those issues that you mentioned, and it's all justified, does that anger justify war? That's what James is warning about, because he's written, you know, a lot of his books are about war.
Yeah.
All right. Dave, thanks a lot. All right. Good to hear from you. 813-239-9663. Email address, dj@wmnf.org. Let's go to Richard in Tampa. Hey, Richard, you're on. What would you like to say?
Good afternoon, Rob. I'm learning more and more about how the democratic way works as far as what democracy is. Watching that movie Lincoln the other day and understanding how President Lincoln had to go out onto the battlefield and feel the pain of the people to really.
Yeah, you know, Richard, I missed that movie, and I don't know how many of our listeners watched it, but does that have something to do with what we're talking about today?
Well, it has to do with a lot of things that's going on in our country.
Okay.
Our leader. And the direction he's taking us.
Well, bring it to a tie up the knot pretty quickly, because nobody's mentioned Lincoln so far today. So you're way out. Tie the knot.
About our leader, you're talking about.
I hope I was able to get that off in time. Wendell writes this, having lived in Singapore and having visited Taiwan and Hong Kong several times, I try and tell Americans that they would be floored by the architecture and the technology of the Chinese cities. It is stunning compared to most architecture and tech in our biggest cities. Note to Americans, after all this craziness is over, go visit China. You will be surprised, writes Wendell in downtown St. Petersburg. Les writes this, if American citizens believe their thoughts are not influenced by political propaganda in this country, they are deaf, dumb, and blind. The emphasis here is on the dumb, and it has nothing to do with our ability to speak, writes Les. Let's go back to the phones, and we've got an open line. This is unusual. 813-239-9663. You're on Radioactivity. Let's go to Matt in Palm Harbor. Hi, Matt. You're on. What would you like to say?
Hi, Rob.
Hi, Matt.
First of all, I enjoy your show. I've talked to you before. I wanted to tell you some thoughts about Mr. Bradley's comments.
Okay, and turn down your radio in the background if you don't mind.
I did.
Okay.
I just did, yes. He's very well informed, and he's very knowledgeable. But unfortunately, just like the caller you had on two calls ago, he's very naive. What we need to understand about the Chinese, and I can say this with some knowledge because I studied foreign affairs in Washington, D.C. when I was younger, and I've also been in the military. I worked in the National Security Establishment. What you need to understand about the Chinese is they are an aggressive, dangerous, expansionist power. The Chinese are not in a situation where they want to share. They want to dominate. Historically, if you look at history, there's an old saying, you're a smart guy, an old saying, the past is prologue. If you look at history, historically, we're in a very similar position to the beginning of the 1930s. And China is basically the same model, nation-state type as Nazi Germany. They were oppressive, dictatorial, they're a closed economy, they hate other countries and believe they're superior. I mean, your guest a couple of calls ago said, oh, well, we're, you know, look what's going on with their riots, and this is all this, you know, we're the same as the Chinese. Well, yeah, but the difference is this. With the protesters here out in the streets, you don't see army tanks going in and machine gunning down and murdering 1,500 people like they did at Tiananmen Square 30 years ago. And, you know, it amazes me the naivete of people who want to think, like you were saying, you know, in your report, that China is going to turn and become like the United States. They're not. They believe they're superior.
But Matt, this is exactly what James Bradley was talking about. I mean, he was suggesting that there's a war lobby. You're ex-military. You served time in Washington. I have no idea what your biography is. But, you know, he says there's a war lobby, and there's people like you that are just itching to fight with China. And he says that that's going to put the world in a dangerous position. And Steve Bannon, you know, I know that Steve Bannon's out there.
I'm not itching to fight with China.
Okay, so go ahead. Tell me. Straighten me out.
What I do want to tell you is historically, we're in a position where we're going to have to fight the Chinese. And there will be a war with China in the next 20 years.
Well, that's what James was saying. He's saying that there is a war lobby and there's people like you out there. And it's a dangerous position because you can't fight a war with a country that's nuclear armed and has 1.4 billion people.
Well, 2 years ago, you probably would have said there's no way we could have a pandemic like this in the United States, but it's happened.
Yeah, but, you know, over and over again,
have a nuclear war with the Chinese.
But Matt, over and over again, military people have told me, I'm old enough to remember this. They told me they had to go to war in Vietnam. We had to go to war in Vietnam because if Vietnam was lost, then that the whole Asia would become communist and repressive and Hitler-like,
Vietnam
as you said.
Completely senseless war. We should have never gone in.
Yeah,
there.
But like Matt, people like you, and I talked to people like you in 1968, 69, 70, 71. They were convinced that that war was justified. Now I can't find any of those people around. And now when I go into Walmart, you see, and I rarely go into Walmart, you see shoes, you see products made in Vietnam. I mean, that war was the dumbest thing we ever did. Why would we want to go to war with China?
Rob, with all due respect, I think you're trying to pigeonhole me and put me in with the war lobby. And that's not my position. I always believe we should negotiate with any country, friend or foe. But by the same token, we have to be realistic and understand that the Chinese are our number one geopolitical and military competitor. And the fact of the matter is that within the next 20 years, everything is pulling us towards a war with them.
Well, and that's why I do shows like this.
Peking that are making the same plans to go to war against
Yeah, but they can't project. We have 900 military bases and installations around the world. They have one. They can't project like we can project. I mean, I think it's stupid to fear the Chinese like
the world, and they have one of the biggest navies.
Well, it's not the biggest navy. Not even close to what we have, and if you combine England and our allies, not even close. Not even close.
Look at the position of Japan in the 30s. They had a lot of the
Well, that's exactly, Matt, that's exactly why I'm doing the show, because there is a war lobby, and you say you're not part of it, but you sound like you're part of it.
I'm a person who knows history, and I know history repeats itself, and this is what's going to happen. This is the direction we're heading, and it doesn't matter if Trump is the president or Biden is the president. The Pentagon will say, you know, we have to, you know, have some kind of a stronger policy.
Boy, I think that's so wrong. Matt, that's the scariest thing I've heard in days.
Well, just like you said earlier, there's a lot of people who in the country who hate China.
Yeah, well,
I don't like the Chinese either. And I can tell you that the Democrats and the Republicans are equally as bad in their respect. Clinton coddled the Chinese and made all kinds of secret deals with them. George W. Bush coddled the Chinese. Obama.
All right. Well, Matt, I don't want to eat up the whole show with your last phone call. Let's see if we can get one more person on the show. But, Matt, thanks a lot.
All right. You always cut me off when you disagree with me, Bob.
No, I've given you 5 minutes. I hope that's okay.
It's your soapbox.
All right. Well, five minutes is pretty long on a talk show. In fact, if you got 5 minutes on Rush Limbaugh, you get an award because you don't get that much time on his show. Matt, thanks a lot. Let's go back to the phones, and we're going to go to Gary in Clearwater. Gary, what would you like to say?
I would like to say, I don't want to talk about China, but knowing that Trump's in office, we have a domination here. I want to ask you, before my time's up, I want to ask you, will we ever see Trump's taxes?
Boy, Gary, I don't know. I mean, I know that there are government agencies fighting to get Trump's taxes. I have no idea whether or not the courts are going to side with those government agencies. Remember, the president has been able to appoint a lot of people to the federal court system.
So I have no idea, I think the chances grow slimmer and slimmer the more judges he appoints. If you want to comment about today's show, please call us up at 813-238-8001 and record your comment on extension 115. And I'll play your comments back tomorrow morning at 11 o'clock. Thanks a lot for listening. I'm Rob Lori. This is Radioactivity. And stay tuned for the latest news from NPR. And then right after that, we'll hear a national progressive call-in show. This is WMNF Tampa.